Hey, do you remember Once Bitten? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember? A show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Once Bitten.
Mark Kendall's a regular guy.
Get me out of here!
With normal problems.
I want to, but I want it to be special.
But Mark's just discovered...
Hello, tall, dark, and handsome.
...that his one-night stand...
I haven't had anything this pure since the Vienna Boys Choir hit town.
...has been around for centuries.
I'm 390 years old.
400 if you're a day.
Mark Kendall is necking...
Finally happened.
...with a vampire.
Once Bitten is a 1985 horror comedy that is pretty frightening and funny, just maybe not for the reasons the filmmakers intended. It's probably best known for featuring a young Jim Carrey in his first starring role and for being completely bug-nut bonkers. Carrey plays Mark Kendall, a high school senior who's growing impatient with his frigid girlfriend Robin. This leaves him vulnerable to the advances of a sexy older woman who turns out to be a vampire. And whatever movie you're imagining based on that premise, forget it. It doesn't exist. Not unless what I just described made you imagine awkward oral sex, bros wrestling in the shower, or a love triangle that's resolved through the majesty of dance. Let's face it, I can't do this one justice with a few sentences. It's better to just jump right in. Donna, what do you remember about Once Bitten?
Well, not much. I remember eventually seeing this movie in bits and pieces on cable and things like that. After I already knew who Jim Carrey was because right. He was famous. So usually when I would watch little parts of it, I would be mostly just perplexed watching it. It seemed a little racy and a little confusing. And I never really stayed tuned in for more than a couple of scenes.
Mm. Yeah. Carlos, what about you?
Well, I was a huge Jim Carrey fan when I was, 11. And so I thought I knew everything about Jim Carrey's career because I remembered him from In Living Color.
Right.
And I saw Ace Ventura and The Mask. And so clearly I knew everything there was to know about Jim Carrey's career. And then I found out that he did this movie, Once Bitten. So I was like, oh, well, I need to see that because the biggest Jim Carrey fan would know what that is. And, I saw it, and I saw about 2 minutes of it,
I
said, this is not for me.
And do you remember what 2 minutes you saw, like just from the very beginning?
I definitely know that it was, he was already turning.
Oh, okay.
Because he had the hair.
Okay.
But I couldn't tell you what the 2 minutes were. I want to say it's like it involves the hamburger stand because that seemed familiar to me. Mm-hmm. But this is otherwise, I mean, like I know of its existence, but it was pretty much a pop culture blind spot for me.
Yeah. Well, there were definitely a few of like, because the same thing for me, I became aware of Jim Carrey through In Living Color, but there was Earth Girls Are Easy. Like there, I remember like slowly becoming aware that he'd had this whole other thing going on pre In Living Color. And, it was the same way watching stuff just because he was in it. I remember that there were a few of these, you know, like, oops, I'm a vampire movies, like, there's the Nicolas Cage, Vampire's Kiss and like, oh shit, I got bit, whatever the fuck, I don't know. And what I realized a few minutes into this was that when we talked about watching this one, I was thinking about another film entirely. All of my great memories of Once Bitten are actually from a movie called My Best Friend is a Vampire. And that one had Robert Sean Leonard in it.
Oh, and it was, love him.
It was the first time I saw a character in a movie take his scrambled eggs and put them between his toast and eat it like a sandwich. And I thought, now that is a real revelation. It's that simple. You can just do that, you guys. And I did. And it was great. And But so I saw this on the movie channel one summer. Oh, my summer of forbidden love with Touchy McMustache, actually. And new listeners are going to be like, what?
It's but, normal. It's fine. Don't worry. It's fine.
I'm okay. It's
fine.
We all lived.
He's fine.
But yeah, my dad and stepmom were at work all day, and they didn't really like me and my sister venturing out while they were gone. So there was a lot of time spent watching movies on cable. And that's I really miss that, actually, because now you're in the mood to watch something. You open up Netflix or Amazon or whatever you've got. You figure out what you're in the mood for, and then there it is. And so you can't really be as adventurous anymore. You don't really roll the dice on stuff like you did when we were kids. Like, I can't tell you how many movies I took a chance on and wound up loving just because there was nothing else on. This was not one of those. like I said, I know I saw it that summer, saw Jim Carrey's name, thought, okay, better check this out. But it turns out the only scene that rung a bell was near the end where he goes to the Halloween dance, or I'm sorry, the pre-Halloween hop, as it were, and where he's wearing all black and the sunglasses, and everyone keeps saying what a great vampire costume it is, and he keeps insisting, I'm not wearing a costume. That's all I remembered. I'm trying to imagine what, like, if I saw this when I was maybe 10 or 11, maybe even a little older, I'm trying to imagine what I would have thought of this movie then. And I don't think there's any way I could have realized how strange it is. And I think I forgot it just because I didn't get much out of it. I could see how I wouldn't have found it very funny. It certainly wasn't like scary enough for me. So I think it ultimately was just pretty forgettable. But this, I want to mention, this came up as a request, actually. One of our listeners, Matt, sent me an email saying we should take a look at this. And now I'm not sure if he actually likes us or not.
Yay, Matt. I think.
Are you mad at us, Matt? What happened?
Do you know where he's
from?
Was
I really shitty about a movie you liked? I'm sorry.
Chris, do you know where he's from?
I don't know.
State. Matt from some state.
Well, he knows who he is, so.
He knows.
You know.
But I'm just kidding, though. Like, he's been very supportive, and I still really do appreciate the suggestion, because this movie, I can't decide if this is the best or worst thing we've watched for the show. I think weirdly it might be both. So thank you, Matt. I'm not sure if you suggested this because it was so fucking weird, but it definitely held my interest this time. So, but before we get into our discussion of the film, why don't we step into this time machine I've got here for just a minute so we can take a quick look at what was going on in the world in 1985.
Okay, so in 1985, when Once Bitten was released, Ronald Reagan had just been sworn into his second term. Amadeus won the best picture from the previous year, and then Out of Africa takes the cake somehow over Once Bitten. I don't know. New Coke debuted, which was quickly not a thing anymore. And, this was the year Live Aid happened.
Oh, We Are the World?
We Are the World. Right. Yeah. And they also discovered the wreckage of the Titanic in 1985, wouldn't you know?
Those two events are linked.
Yeah, same thing. Live Aid said it was for Ethiopian famine, but not really. It was mostly to get to the Titanic. this was a major year in all of our lives because Nintendo was released along with Super Mario Brothers late in the year.
They should make a movie out of that.
Oh, wouldn't that be something? So many ideas just start flowing.
I immediately see like a dystopian New York setting.
I'm seeing dinosaurs. There should be dinosaurs.
Yeah, but like human. Like they shouldn't look like dinosaurs. They should look like Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, and no jumping. No jumping. So let's see. other movies that were out at the time, Back to the Future, number one.
Yes.
Awesome. It was the highest grossing movie of the year.
Yeah.
You also might have been able to take in The Color Purple, Cocoon, Goonies, Mad Max,
Beyond Thunderdome, I believe.
Thunderdome one. And there was like a Rocky IV and Rambo II.
I'm sorry, you don't say Rocky IV. You give it the respect it deserves. Rocky ended the Cold War in Rocky IV.
Rocky IV.
He fought Ivan Drago, who killed
For America,
Apollo Creed.
Donna,
spoiler
God.
Alert.
So sorry. A Rocky IV in which the. Soviet
Stop Union. Saying a Rocky IV. It's the Rocky IV.
She cannot do it.
So after Rocky IV was over,
yeah.
Mimi went home and watched the television. You might have seen such shows as The Cosby Show, Family Ties, Murder, She Wrote, Cheers, Golden Girls, and Who's the Boss?
We never found out.
No, it's. I think it's Mona.
It's Mona or Angela or Samantha.
Well, but you know what? Speaking of movies, I'm pretty sure this was also the year of The Breakfast Club and stuff like Weird Science. And I think that's kind of interesting just sort of because – oh, maybe even St. Elmo's Fire. And because
I think
this was sort of
then.
The Brat Pack really at their apex. And so I think it's interesting to consider what was going on in the teen movie genre – when Once Bitten was released, since as a horror comedy, the two things it's got going for it are like, not going for it, that's a poor choice of words, but like, what, you know, you've got all the teenager stuff and then all the vampire stuff. And so when you look at the other movies about teenagers coming out around this time, and then the other horror movies coming out around this time, because I think Nightmare on Elm Street 2 had come out, which means there were probably already a couple of Friday the 13ths at this point. That's just interesting to keep in mind as we start talking about this movie, because I think a lot of people's instinct might be to say like, oh, sure. Yeah. This stuff's kind of silly, but it was the 80s and it's dated and like, yeah, but not in the same way like The Breakfast Club is. this is a little different.
I think what's really interesting about this year is that, Back to the Future was the highest grossing movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what was the last year that the highest grossing movie in America wasn't a franchise like that was already established. Well, yeah. When was the last time it was an original?
Avatar?
No.
It's gotta be.
I think so, yeah.
It's gotta be, yeah. Unless Inception did crazy numbers, but I don't think so.
Yeah, but those are definitely the exception to the rule. Like, but go back before Avatar and then what is it? I mean, it's
Titanic.
Oh, man, if that were true, that would be so depressing.
Yeah, I would guess probably like The Matrix.
But you know what? Titanic is based on an existing property.
Which was
an existing property whose remains were found in 1985.
It's all connected.
Same deal.
All right. Well, that's 1985. And now that we've got some context for what was going on in the world, let's head back to the present day because we just watched Once Bitten with fresh eyes. So let's see how it holds up. The first thing worth mentioning is that there's a grammatical error in the Netflix description. Wait, let me read it. This is what it says. An inexperienced teenager is tempted by a glamorous vampirist who must sleep with three virgins a year to stay maintain her beauty. Even Netflix is like, that's fine. Netflix also guessed that I would rate this 2.5 stars, and I was a little optimistic there, Netflix. So Lauren Hutton plays the vampire. That's not a spoiler. There's no reveal here. It's the first fucking scene. Just to make sure you're really bored for the rest of this first act, they make sure and dump all of the relevant information right here. But before we get to her, the first thing we see is her butler, Sebastian, walking around her mansion. And this goes on forever. It's just him slowly walking in and out of rooms while the weird waltzy score plays. And, you know, finally he walks up to the coffin, knocks on it. And his conversation with the Countess, which is what this woman calls herself, it's basically just, now, you know, you have to drink a virgin's blood three times before Halloween. And I thought, okay, so I spent most of this movie thinking that that meant she had, they're talking about three separate virgins a year, and maybe Jim Carrey was going to be the last one. But no, it means she has to drink the same virgin's blood three separate times. These are poo-poo magoo nonsense rules. Like, this, these are like Gremlins rules, but okay, well, fine, we'll go with it. But any, so she's upset that virgins are so hard to come by these days, and she's a little cranky about it. And Sebastian says, someone woke up on the wrong side of the coffin. And these are the caliber of jokes, folks. This is what we're settling in for. This was their strong start. And so I have to say that, like, one of the things that struck me immediately was that, I mean, okay, look, the film is not without its merits. Well, no, actually, even if as I say that, I'm not sure I believe it. But this movie has all the visual panache of like a soap opera. Like everything just looks really flat and it's all just like blasted with light. There's no attempt to create a mood or atmosphere. Like, you know, Hocus Pocus also winds up being a zany comedy, but the opening moments are shot like a horror movie. It still has fun playing with the iconography of horror films. Like, I don't know. You expect maybe this centuries-old vampire to have a mansion that's filled with relics from all of the time periods she's lived in, or to maybe have, like, a visual nod to gothic visuals that we associate with vampire movies. But no, she lives at the house from Weekend at Bernie's. And I realize that she says she just moved in. But for all the talk about how difficult it is to adjust to the modern era, it would have been cool to see that actually reflected somewhere in the movie. But
yeah, she seems like she's doing great in the modern era.
She's so of the time, right? I mean, she's like, yeah. Right, the dress, the house. I mean, just everything. Yeah, oh. It feels very complete. There's no.
We should also say that Sebastian is played by the tremendous Cleavon Little.
Yes. Yes.
From Blazing Saddles, most famously. And I was surprised to see him in this because, honestly, yeah, kind of beneath him as an actor.
Oh,
but
especially post Blazing Saddles, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's,
and he's essentially playing, I mean, I don't know that they ever address his sexuality in the movie, but he's essentially playing the 80s trope of kind of flamboyantly gay black man.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I'm gonna have what was the name of the character? Hollywood from Mannequin?
That's exactly who I was going to bring up later.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that you're trying to be nice about the film doesn't address his sexuality. I don't think it has to. I don't think it's I don't think it's very ambiguous what they're going for.
Do they? When do they?
Oh, he's the coming out of the closet line.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Come out of the closet.
He's like, oh, I came out of the closet 8 centuries ago.
Yeah, and you know whoever wrote that line was so proud of themselves. You can tell.
Really bad. Cleverest.
Okay, that's lunch. I'm done today. But so we meet our main character Mark, played by Jim Carrey, and his girlfriend Robin. And this, I think, is one of the better scenes in the movie. Like, they're in his ice cream truck parked at one of the spots where teenagers go to have sex, but Robin just won't give it up. She's not ready. And, you know, Mark is frustrated. He gets out of the car and everyone else is having sex. Every car is bobbing up and down. There's that crazy cutaway to the dude in the convertible. And you just see his hairy ass as he's pounding away on someone. Oh, and the really great thing is the decision to have those oil drills in the background. Because even those are pumping away. Like, everything in sight is fucking except for Mark.
Poor Mark.
Okay, so then after that, we meet Pocket, Bob Saget, and young Bill Maher. And these are Mark's best friends, Jamie and Russ. And Mark's telling them that maybe he should just have sex with a stranger, and then he can go back to Robin without the pressure of wanting sex from her. Great plan. This is, to me, one of the first And one of the biggest mistakes that the script makes with Mark's character, but we'll talk more about that later. So the guys decide to go to Hollywood to cruise for chicks. And at this point, it almost starts to feel like weird right-wing propaganda where Hollywood is this bizarre liberal fantasy land that looks like, you know, it's something out of a Terry Gilliam movie. There is a woman walking a lion down the street. The way you'd walk a dog. I looked away for a second and I caught the very end of that shot and I was like, what the hell? What the fuck is going on here? Like, I can see how being the writer of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead and being a little misinformed about how climbing the corporate ladder might work, I can understand how that might happen. How does this happen?
Yeah, that's insane.
What is this? Because if the film had really run with this sort of absurdist humor or this sort of tone, that would have been one thing, but it doesn't. Like, this, there's not another moment like this that's so deliberately, like, farcical. So it just feels really jarring and a little sloppy. Like, ultimately, this winds up coming across like a situation where, like, the director was off his meds and everyone was too scared to tell him no. So you just like, you just buckle up your life vest because there's a great big tidal wave of crazy coming at you. Here, I wrote this down. The one thing I wanted both of you to make note of is that he's driving the ice cream truck without the music playing.
Well, then, I mean, it's a movie.
Well, that's because they're playing Once Bitten over it.
Okay.
His ice cream truck plays Once Bitten.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, I read this all wrong. Okay.
Yeah. I thought this is perhaps my favorite scene in the movie. And I have this fantasy that if we had so many millions of dollars to do, like, promotions for our podcasts, like video promotions for our podcasts, I would wish that we could recreate this scene with Chris, Donna, and Carlos in the ice cream truck talking and laughing about inside jokes, which no one can hear as we drive around in an ice cream truck to Once Bitten.
I love that our idea of big promotion is a movie that either no one has ever seen or no one remembers. It just completely devoid of context.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. So they, after cruising around for a while, they wind up settling in at a bar where, Jesus Christ, there isn't one normal scene in this movie. This bar, I can't handle this. Each table has a phone on it, and each table is numbered so that you can pick up the phone and dial other tables. But they strike out all night until someone calls the table asking for Mark, and it's this older woman sitting at the bar. And I'm really confused by the series of events that lead to him going home with her, because the reason he's out is to get laid. This was his idea. That's all he's looking for. And he's totally into her, you know, from the second he sees her. But his friends, while he's talking to her, they start chatting with a couple of cougars, and then one of the cougars' husbands shows up and starts screaming at them. And I think he even yells something like, "Caught in the act, pedophile!" And this is like, yeah. This is such a strange scene. And he he pulls a gun and everyone scatters. And so the Countess tells Jim Carrey, "Oh, you better just come home with me. You don't want the cops to question you." And like, this is so needlessly complicated. Like, why can't he just go home with her and his friends give him the thumbs up as he's walking out of the bar? Like, did the director not understand how to communicate a passage of time? Like, he's like, "They're at the bar now. I need them to be at her place later. The only option is to do this in real time. So the only way to get them to leave the bar now is if they do it at gunpoint." Yeah, this is good. Now we're cooking. I'm literally cooking meth, which I am going to smoke before every single shot of this film. That's the explanation for this. So Mark goes home with her. They should have lost the entire expository intro with her and Sebastian. I think when he sees her sitting at the bar should have been the first time we saw her too. And then you start to figure out something unusual might be going on with this woman. I mean, but you know what? That would introduce some actual tension. So obviously that wasn't an option. So anyway, at one point, Mark asks her if she's a hooker, to which she replies, I'm whatever you want me to be. So
yes.
Definitely a whore is what I would be thinking.
Yeah, she's a hooker.
Yeah, that's exactly what a hooker would say. Mm-hmm. So there's this bizarre moment, like Carlos, you mentioned this, where Sebastian is hiding, or Donna, we just talked about this, where Sebastian's hiding in the closet. She tells him to come out, da 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 da. And then there's this ongoing thing where every time he's in the closet, he comes out wearing like some of her clothes, like he likes trying on her clothes right. When he's in the closet. And barf, embarrassing relic of the 80s. So blah, blah, blah. She seduces Mark. And now this is eventually explained later on. But the way they shoot her going down on him and him screaming, I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. She bites him on the dick.
That's what I thought, too.
I mean, that's one way to stake your claim in a crowded genre. Like, oh, you see what I did there? Stake? No? Well.
Oh.
All right. Well, someone woke up on the wrong side of the coffin. So Mark passes out. We're introduced to one of the most interesting and utterly wasted concepts in the movie, the Countess's collection of lost boys. I mean, that's what they are. Just like in Hook, they're wearing clothes from the era in which they became vampires. And there's this whole legion of them living under the house, and apparently Mark is going to become one of them after she's finished with him. But the movie doesn't do anything with this. Like, we don't know why she doesn't kill the people she feeds on. We don't know why they stay subordinate to her. And quite frankly, that stuff really would have helped, because something else needs to be on the line here. Either Mark gets killed and tossed aside when the Countess gets what she wants from him, or becoming one of her undead servants has to seem like a really shitty way to spend eternity, because as it stands, doesn't seem all that bad. It seems like they're all pretty happy to be there, and everything's kind of hunky-dory. You're living in a mansion, you got a guy, you got your own butler. I don't know. I was kind of disappointed this didn't go anywhere.
I thought that it was just sort of, because I think at one point they say, you know, if she doesn't get a new virgin, you're going to lose her protection. So I just sort of took it to mean, like, she's going to take your mortal life and your virginity, and then basically you just get room and board forever.
I know, it, but
and that it didn't go anywhere. It wasn't that interesting, but I was like, oh, sure.
Yeah.
Go get a
that's
job,
what I mean.
You old-ass vampire.
It's certainly not,
you've been dead
it's certainly
for
not an
years.
Ideal. It's certainly not an ideal situation, but it should have been more. There should have been something worse about, like, oh, if this woman gets her hooks in me, if she's allowed to, you know, complete this ritual, whatever. Like, shit needs to be really bad. It's got to be worse than just come live in my mansion.
Yeah.
So she sends Mark home, and she tells him that she'll see him in his dreams. And this doesn't make any sense, because why wouldn't she just hang on to him if she knows she needs him
exactly.
two more times? That, why even risk
yeah,
it?
That doesn't make any sense. Like, you would just keep him until you were done with him. And even then, I guess you would still keep him because he'd be a vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that doesn't make sense. They should have – his friends should never have seen him again.
Yeah. It's a much shorter movie, which would have been great.
Well, so, I think a lot of scenes in this movie, and one in particular that I'm sure we're going to talk about later, are in this movie simply because this movie would have been under an hour without them. I think it even starts with the opening credits. Those credits did not need to be that long
Sebastian.
That's
just him moseying
the
around the place. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, but as it was happening, I was like, well, how short would this movie be without this? We'd be under, you know, it's like a 5-minute opening of him just fixing yeah. already fixed paintings and dusting immaculate furniture.
Right.
You know, like, it doesn't make any sense.
So, at school the next day, Mark's friends want all the details on what happened. And I believe one of them asks if he went for the pokey, whatever the hell that means.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I thought of you when he said that. I was like, oh my God.
I don't know how I feel about that. I've also never heard boobs referred to as magoombas, and I'm definitely filing that away for future use. Future use.
For
you're in your McGumber. So Robin is behind them. She overhears them talking. She realizes what Mark has done. Mark thinks he slept with the Countess at this point. So he chases after Robin, and this is another crazy scene. Actually, they wind up having another argument in just a scene or two, and I'm just going to talk about both of them right now because they both boil down to him thinking what he did was totally justified and then her being upset about it. And he is so unapologetic about what he's done. He's just like, oh, yeah, I went for the pokey. So what? And she winds up being the most understanding girlfriend ever because she starts laughing. And essentially what she's saying is, I guess I am pretty frigid and terrible, aren't I? I suppose it is my fault you jammed your dick into mummified Melanie Griffith. Like, I mean, a point early on, she says, or he says, that's not fair. I was drunk. Like, yeah, fine. But did you not go out that night specifically to crush some V? Like, that was your idea. He didn't get dragged into this by his friends and like, wind up making some terrible mistake because he'd been drinking. This was his plan, but fine. He was drunk. Her vagina's a desert. C'est la vie. I'm just having a really hard time liking either of these characters because there's not even a fraction of this that feels believable. And in a story with supernatural or mystical elements, I don't know. I think you really want to make sure the human side of it, like it's recognizable as actual human behavior. But,
well, when they first like suggest that he just go bang a stranger,
he suggests that they don't. He does.
Well, when the suggestion first comes, when I say they, I meant the film proper.
Oh, okay.
Suggests that he just go bang a stranger. I was thinking to myself, oh, then they must not be that serious a couple. Yeah. I just thought like maybe they were just dating and, you know, he tried and it didn't work out. And if he bangs a stranger, she's not going to be offended because it's not like they were going steady or anything. But then they're totally going steady. So it's
right. Doesn't she like say, take your ring back or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
and he says, what am I supposed to do with this?
That's right.
Finger, yo.
Oh, really quick. Did you guys notice that Robin's friend Suzette is played by Megan Mullally from Will and Grace?
No.
What?
Yeah. She's only got a couple lines in the movie, but yeah, it's totally young Megan Mullally.
Now I got to go watch the whole thing again.
No. You don't.
I'll just take your word for it.
I think you better.
Is that the scene that happens in front of the mountain mural?
Yes. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Such a shot.
The mountain mural. I was watching and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, yeah, virgin, yeah, 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 totally mummified Melanie Griffith. I love Lauren Hutton. Let me just say that.
Yeah, I do too. I do. Yeah. Too.
But all of a sudden I was like, wait, I thought this was set in like California, in like Hollywood, and that now there are mountains.
That's so funny that you bring that up because when that happened, when they stepped away from the mural and you realize they're at their school, is when I realized how utterly disconnected I must be from the movie. That like because I was like, oh God, I didn't even for a split second think to myself, why are we in the mountains? I was just going with it.
I was like, I must not have been paying attention. I guess they're in the mountains.
And then, but on my end, it's just, yeah, we're in the mountains now. All right.
Yeah, that's totally like the director saw that wall and was just like, oh, we must shoot something in front of that wall.
Oh, so silly.
Well, we're also, this is around the same time we're starting to see that Mark's already beginning to act a little weird. You know, he wants an uncooked burger for lunch, even though it was previously established he likes them well done. There's that weird frog dissection scene that could totally have been cut from the movie. And then his dad finds him taking a nap inside a chest in his room. That part I actually thought was sort of funny. I kind of liked that part.
Yeah.
And, I love his interaction with his parents. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. And dad mentions, maybe you should see a doctor. You're looking a little pale. You've been pacing around all night. And that's when I realized, like, oh, I guess several days have passed. I thought this was, like, one day at school, but okay. Mm. The next thing I want to talk about is the laundromat. I don't know, Carlos, if this is what you were referring to earlier, but in terms of scenes that absolutely don't need to be in the film, this to me is, like, one of the big ones. This is where Jamie and Russ think, this is the perfect place to pick up girls. So they separate from Mark. And we just stay with Jamie and Russ as they go into this laundromat. And the plan here is to ask the women if they need help folding their underwear. And this is how I met my wife, actually. This totally works. You should all try this. I mean, there's a nice bit where as Russ leaves the laundromat, Jamie is spinning around in one of the washers because the girl he hit on threw him in there. But regardless, this is just shitty storytelling. Like, nothing that happens here has any effect on the story whatsoever. And if we're going to spend so much screen time with them without our main character, it really should. And it's just so strange to see Mark exit the scene right away, and then we just sort of twiddle our thumbs with these two chuckleheads for no good reason. And if it's there just to show that they're horny and bad with women, I'd argue that we've already established that. But if what you're trying to do is really reinforce that, then have them come to the clothes store with Mark and have silly stuff happening with them in the background as Mark talks to Robin. They don't get to have their own scene at this point in the story. That was another one where I was just like, come on, get on with it. Like, this doesn't need to be in here.
It doesn't need to be in there, but this is not the scene I was talking about.
Okay, well, I can't wait
to... when we get to it, I will tell you.
Okay, good.
This scene, this laundromat scene, let me tell you, it's a complete farce because that woman is folding nothing but the laciest of lacies.
Mm.
And that business is all hand wash, air dry.
Absolutely.
You don't bring that crap to a laundromat. There's just no way. Just no way. I mean, it's delightful for the teenage fantasy, but no.
That's an important takeaway.
It is. It is.
The way that the scene with Mark and Robin plays out now, where... like, when they shot this must have been right around the time that they realized what an incredible physical comedian Jim Carrey is. Because this is sort of like the one scene of the film where you really get a sense of what he was going to go on to do. Like, him acting goofy while Robin talks to a customer.
Beautiful.
Well, we're about 2/3 of the way through the movie at this point. So let's pull over here for a second and, hey, look at that. We just turned down to Chris's Fashion Corner. Well, thanks for stopping by. Let's start with our friend Sebastian, who is apparently preparing to enter the Kentucky Derby because he's dressed like a fucking jockey in every scene. I don't know what the purpose of those pants are. So at first I admired the restraint because, like we touched on earlier, when you look at a character like Hollywood from the Mannequin movies, that's just sort of where we were at in the mid-80s with our gay comic relief sidekicks. But then every time he comes out of her closet with, you know, trying on her clothes, I mean, the whole punchline is just, oh, isn't it silly? He's gay.
I thought it was sort of fabulous that he came out wearing interesting things. I loved the sheer overrobe. I'll say that. I loved the sheer overrobe.
I'm having, which one was that? Was that the black material, very thin with the little doodads on it?
Yeah, that was shaped like a robe. And
You're talking about. I don't know. What am I doing? I'm in the middle of Fashion Corner. I'm going to try and downplay the fact that I noticed what somebody was wearing. What am I trying to do here? It's one or the other, buddy. You got to pick a lane. I have to say that Mark has no major offenses. Like, the moments where he looks ridiculous are totally intentional. So, like, for the most part, there wasn't even very much about him that screamed 80s to me. It's just some of the other characters were so loud with their outfits that his seemed pretty restrained by comparison. If only Sweet Robin got off so easy. Like, don't get me wrong, this actress, Karen Coppens, is gorgeous. Like, pause the movie and Google her gorgeous. But the hugger-mugger clusterfuck she's working with when he goes to visit her at work is pretty alarming. Like, she's got the white-collared shirt, the white overalls rolled up at the ankles, hot pink belt, ankle socks with the little hearts on them, a kicking pair of Keds. This looks like brain-damaged Barbie. It comes with a bike helmet and a derp face. And I guess, okay, so we probably have to mention the Countess herself. Had we watched this before Dick Tracy, I would have been complaining about Madonna's conservative outfits and lamenting that she didn't show more skin. I mean, so Lauren Hutton, also a very attractive woman, but whoever shot this, like the makeup, the lighting, a lot of the time she looks really mannish, like when she's dressed like a magician at the dance, what's the trick? She made her penis disappear. But, like, the wide shots of that scene look like a Van Halen concert. It looks like David Lee Roth jumping around. When I was a desperate virgin, it was always my dream to be seduced by goth Jessica Tandy in a Rod Stewart wig. Okay, can I be,
I'm picturing
okay, hold
goth
on.
Jessica Tandy.
Let me be honest. Let me be honest about something, okay? So the Fashion Corner thing starts off as a joke, and then it kind of becomes a thing. And we don't do it every week because most weeks I don't like I don't have anything to say about this. I don't want to do this, and I do. I feel shitty. I feel shitty about saying this stuff. Like I come up with stuff knowing that, okay, we better do a Fashion Corner this week. It's been a long time. I don't legitimately feel this way. Like, let's be clear. I'd hump the bejesus out of both of these women. So what I'm saying here is not really – it's not that severe. I'm really not this catty, like, Tim Gunn, like, girl, you did not. It's just
more of a Michael Kors. Tim Gunn is actually uplifting.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He's very supportive.
And this is from the notes I keep in my head. Lauren Hutton's boobs. Thank you. That's all the notes.
That was
like when there's the giant painting in the first minute of the movie, I was like, oh, that's a promise of things to come.
Nope.
No, that does not happen.
No. Not even a nip slip, I don't think. Maybe nothing. On the Blu-ray, I don't know. That kind of reminds me of like, so when I worked, it's funny. Once Bitten is maybe one of the movies this absolutely doesn't work for, but when I was at Best Buy in high school and we used to play this game where when we were like sorting through the DVDs and stuff, we would put the word erotic in front of movie titles. And then, you know, you try and imagine that movie. And so like, erotic Toy Story, erotic Reindeer Games, the erotic Fifth Element, you know, shit like that.
What?
No, try it. It's fun.
Erotic Schindler's List.
There it is.
I lost.
I'm going to bend the rules a little bit here, but 12 Angry Erotic Men. Erotic Baby's Day Out. Wait, can I tell you what I love about that one? Is that it's ambiguous. Is the baby erotic or are the series of events erotic? You have to see the movie to find out and then immediately go to prison.
Oh, Lord.
But yeah, that painting definitely hinted at a much more erotic version of the film. So Mark goes into a dressing room where Robin works and the Countess appears, and this is where she drinks from him for a second time. His strange behavior escalates. I don't really feel like detailing any of this unless there was something you guys wanted to talk about.
The thing that I love is every time she bites him, he says, ow, which I feel like doesn't happen in other vampire movies. You never hear anyone go,
well, they're
ow!
Not getting bit on the dick.
I guess, yeah. And then it starts happening, I think after the second time that she bites him, that after she bites him, she walks away and she shoves an innocent bystander.
Yeah, that is a thing.
She's like, oh, that blood was delicious. Shoving you, bitch. Like, it happens like two or three times. And I don't understand it, but I thought it was so funny.
I think this time when she shoves the old woman in the store, it's because, and this is the other thing I probably should have mentioned, is that so the real conflict in the movie starts to be that she, you know, she's after Jim Carrey and she's starting to realize that his connection to Robin is stronger than she realized, that this Robin might be a problem. And I think right before she pushes the old woman, she's telling Sebastian, oh, this girl has more of a hold on him than I thought, and she's starting to piss me off. And then so the outlet for her anger was just this poor sweet grandma that was, you know, shopping for some knickknacks and then kablam.
Well, it's amazing. I love the shove.
Yeah.
Keep it, Lauren Hutton.
In life, just fucking own it. Do it.
She's been shoving people ever since.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just skip right to the pre-Halloween hop. I have to say that for all of the movie's weird missteps, this is actually a pretty authentic depiction of a high school dance. The establishing shots, I mean, not what's coming in just a minute here. Like, don't get me wrong. This is not how you guys solved your problems through dance. I went to High School Musical. That's where I went to school. But I'm talking about like the number of extras. You know, that seems about right. Sometimes high school movies can't afford these big crowd shots, so you'll see like 15 people at a dance or a graduation. Like, I'm pretty sure there were less than 30 students total at Bayside High. But yeah,
and the dance, yeah, the school dance in Teen Wolf.
Oh, sure.
Is like 20 people.
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. Right. So this one, yeah, I mean, just all of the, you know, the way it was decorated, it didn't seem like there's a tendency to make these too elaborate in these movies, or too much or too little. And this, I thought, was sort of like, yeah, this is about what high school dances sort of felt like. But yeah, this dance off, mother of all that is fuck. So the Countess cuts in and starts dancing with Mark. And then Robin's like, oh, yeah? And she starts dancing vindictively. And I grimaced. I fucking grimaced. This is one of those moments where you're embarrassed for the people on screen. Like, I started looking at other things around my office, like, oh, what's going on in this corner over here? Is it over yet? I just couldn't watch this. But I know when we were talking today, Donna, and you were saying, like, this was the best movie ever. And I knew it was this scene. I knew this scene is where the movie had you completely.
Hands off. He belongs to me. Hands off.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. That is such a great dance off. Oh, I just love it. And I was not ashamed for the people. I was jealous. I was like, Olive, wake up. We got to do a dance off right now.
Olive is your cat. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I did think, first of all, did she plan on stripping? Because she's stripping.
Right.
Jill strips.
Yeah.
She's
going tit for tat with, oh my God, I didn't do that on purpose.
Yeah, you said that.
I didn't do that on purpose. She's matching. Well, if you're going to compete with the Countess here, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Made sense to
me. Yeah,
you
got to bring it.
I was all for it.
But she has on like a total underneath ready to go. I was planning on taking this off.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Her dance outfit is nice, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I do like that this conflict is played out visually. Like, I don't hate that idea, but, well, nope. I just caught myself lying again. None of that's true. I hate this. It turns into the worst episode of Glee you've ever seen. And ladies and gentlemen, that is saying something. Like, the man who made this movie was stuffed with drugs. He was a goddamn cocaine pinata. There is no other explanation for this. Listeners, if you don't want to sit through this entire movie, watch this one scene on YouTube. I promise it delivers.
I think that the dance scene is really well choreographed. I think it's funny.
What?
But it does not belong in this movie.
No.
That's the thing. It belongs in a musical, which this movie is not. It doesn't make any sense for the rest of this film.
It definitely happens like in a different universe than the rest of the movie is taking place.
Yes, it doesn't make any sense for the rest of this film.
No.
But it's really, I think, like really well executed for a dance scene in a high school movie.
I just think it's delightful to throw in a dance scene. So, I mean, you know, sue me. But I think that just about any movie could benefit from a random dance scene being added.
Schindler's List.
Again, yeah. Schindler's List.
Erotic Schindler's List.
Know, and you get, you know, kind of down in the dumps because, you know, Schindler's List. But what if all of a sudden... Hands off!
I can't, yeah, no one would have a problem with that. Liam Neeson dancing in front of Hitler.
That would be the second movie Steven Spielberg would have to end with. Sorry, guys, I was going through some things.
We got a real collection building here of this. Well, I will say that the moment right after this where he disappears in the mirror is pretty cool because it's done practically. It's not some shitty composite effect. To me, it looks like they built a mirror image of the set and had another actor standing there duplicating Robin's movements. And so that, to me, that effect, that that moment, that still really holds up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so after she sees him disappear, Robin runs to a bookstore to do research on vampires. She's talking to the owner, and this is basically the scene that pops up in every vampire movie, the one where they explain the rules of these vampires. And this is where we learn he's not getting bit on the dick, but on the thigh. I guess I would buy this if it was the Countess's way of being sneaky and not having anyone notice the bite marks. But if it's in a book with a fucking illustration next to it, then why? And I don't know. Well, and of course, the other problem is we already know all this. Like, not only should Mark be the one trying to figure out what's happening to him and not Robin, but we already know all of this because of that first scene, which doesn't need to be there. But so Robin tells Jamie and, oh, wait, actually, about the bookstore really quick. Are we in a Fisher Stevens situation with the bookstore owner?
I think we are.
Okay.
I think we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's the first of two really offensive moments in this movie. And I think they come back to back. And I didn't mean that pun, but
yeah,
it's going to come into play in the next scene.
Yes. Yes. Okay, great. That's exactly what I'm queuing up here. So Robin tells Jamie and Russ that Mark's a vampire and they need to look for the bite marks on his thigh. And so they get a chance to do this when they're all showering together after gym class. They can't get a good look, so at one point, Russ grabs Mark from behind and holds him still while screaming at Jamie, do it now. And then other students start yelling out, fags in the shower, fag alert, fag alert. Wow. And here, boys and girls, is why I should not ever go on IMDb anymore, ever, 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 ever. So I look up, there's a thread on this film's IMDb page titled The Shower Scene. And I'm like, well, shouldn't click on this. Here I go. And then I open it up and it says, best scene in the movie? ? And then it's just a ton of replies of like, hilarious, laughed my ass off, loved it, fag alert, LOL. I'm like, that's it. I'm done. IMDb, I can't. And there's other threads about how the dance scene is like the greatest thing and where do I get that song? And I love this. IMDb, you're wrong. I'm sorry. Everything is wrong. But yeah, this is like, this really stands out as being like, oh my gosh, we were doing this in the mid 80s. We're so sorry. We didn't know.
But it also proves that the Cleavon Little character is a negative stereotype.
Right.
They don't look at this. Whoever made this film is not looking positively on homosexuality.
No, that's what I was saying before, where the whole punchline is just the fact that he's gay. And the punchline here is just the fact that they look gay. That's it. That's the joke.
Right. But like I'm thinking like in the day, and actually, I mean, we still have these conversations now about different minorities, but like in the day, it would have been, well, at least they're getting representation in film. At least there are some gay characters in film. This shows that even though there was a gay character in this movie, they did not feel good about that.
Right.
Like, they didn't feel good that, about homosexuality just in general. It was still something very scary to whoever, either the director or the writers.
Yeah.
All felt that this was totally okay.
Well, yeah, because these two kids think their life is over. Because in the next scene, they're lamenting the fact that, like, everyone thinks they're homos.
And this is all the scene that I'm talking about that did not need to be in this movie.
Okay.
Everything. Okay, so she finds out that he's a vampire. Well, she sees that he doesn't have a reflection in the mirror, which there's no other way to explain that.
Right,
in general. She goes to a bookstore to find out about the rules of the vampire. Okay, I'm on board. I get it. And she finds out that he would have these bite marks on his leg. And she finds out that this vampire countess needs to drink the blood of a virgin. That's all fine. The next scene, she tells his two buddies to check for a bite mark. why didn't she just check for it herself? And if she knew that this countess who she's now met has a, like, you know, has the power to put him under a spell and might be a vampire, and by the way, is turning her boyfriend into a vampire, why wouldn't she just have sex with her boyfriend?
Right. Exactly.
Like, none of that made sense. That whole scene where she's like, well, you guys clearly have to go look at his naked body and make sure he's got, you know, that bite mark, because I don't know what else to do. Look for the bite mark.
Yeah, there's three of us, and one of us is more qualified to do this than the other two.
Yes. And so that whole thing is just set up to be a giant homophobic joke.
Yep.
That is the and also filler. Like, it's probably about 4 or 5 minutes to the running time. So that whole scene to me was like, this did not need to be in the movie. And then when they just start yelling fag alert, I'm like, this really didn't need to be in this movie. Yeah. Because now this movie's being mean when it wasn't mean at all. It was very lighthearted the whole rest of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's just, I'm sure it a lot of that has to do with just the fact that it's now 2013 and it's probably even more jarring now. I'm trying really hard to sort of put this in context and imagine how it played back then. And I think, unfortunately, a large chunk of the audience that went to go see this movie was probably on board with this being riotously funny.
You know how in the show Three's Company, Mr. Roper always thought Jack Tripper was gay, and that was the only way he would let him live with the two women?
Yeah.
And so there were always those, like, innuendos, and, like, he would see something and he would make a face. Mm-hmm. But we all knew he was wrong. Like, we all knew that he was the one who was being bigoted.
Yeah.
And so it was like we were laughing at him. In this, we're supposed to be laughing at the fact that they're, you know, that everyone thinks they're gay now.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I'm sorry, that, like, even then, that should not have been funny. That just should not have been.
Yeah.
We should have been laughing. You know, even if it would have been like someone walking by going, like, giving him his kind of look like, okay, guess that's what's going on in the shower. Like, that would have been different than this, than yelling out fag alert.
Yeah.
That was rough.
Well, boy. I'm just going to skip right to the end here where Robin is taken to the Countess's mansion. Mark and his friends break in to rescue her. She tells Mark he's still a virgin. She was taking blood from his thigh. Whatever. The Lost Boys grab them, and they see this device that the Countess has set up for Mark to lie in while she deflowers him in front of everybody, apparently, and puts Mark under her spell. If she can do that, I don't know why she needs the restraints on this thing, but okay. Robin manages to help him snap out of it. They make a run for it. And this chase sequence is sort of fun. The one thing that stood out was it seemed like the composer decided that because he was never going to get a chance to score a Superman movie, he may as well just go for it now. I don't know if you guys caught this, but this whole scene is just like, dun da 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 da. Like, what are you doing? Where did this come from? And everyone's running around, and Mark and Robin wind up going in a circle. They end up back in the room with all of the Lost Boys' coffins. And I did really like the moment at the end of this where, you know, the vampires are all smashing through every door in the house, and the Countess is like, can you try the knob just once? And, you know, that long beat before the one Lost Boy slowly reaches for the door handle and lets it slide open. Like, oh, sorry. And, but then he crosses the room and he unlatches another door so that more Lost Boys can get in. But hold on. We've seen them busting through brick walls. Yes. These two couldn't get through the wooden door.
One came through a cinder block ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one shoves up through the ground.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
The door's a real problem. But this is my favorite part of the movie right here. Like, legitimately, the Countess walks into the room, sees the coffin in the center going up and down, and it's just sort of like, of course, this is how the movie ends. Robin finally has sex with Mark, so he's no longer any good to the Countess. And even, you know, but then that's immediately followed by, well, why didn't, like you said, Carlos, why didn't she do that the second she found out what this woman was after? Like, regardless of, like, I don't know if I'm ready or not. Like, this guy's life might be on the line, so. But not really, I guess. It's either have sex with your girlfriend or go live in a mansion.
But even then, that would, like, if that was the outcome, that would still be very problematic.
I guess.
It's like, you need to bang your boyfriend because he's going to die if you don't. Like, she's not ready to have sex. She shouldn't have to if she doesn't want to.
Yeah. I feel like that's a line that's been around.
Or, well, then, but then, okay, so now we'll go find a proper prostitute. The morals of the ending got very, very bizarre. But, yeah, so well, the clock hits midnight. The Countess is out of time, instantly begins to show her true age, which is not that different from how she normally looks, honestly.
Which is like 70?
Yeah. And she thinks she's doomed, but Seabiscuit tells her it's not going to be so bad. Don't worry.
Seabiscuit?
Well, he's riding horses. I don't know. And Mark and Robin decide to do it again, and that's Once Bitten. And I'll tell you something. This movie is aptly named because I'll know better next time. Final thoughts on Once Bitten, Donna.
What a nutty, nutty, goofy movie. You should watch it in order to be astounded at what filmmaking can be.
Yeah.
And for the dance sequence, I mean, try to have some beers or something while you're watching it. This is a hilarious movie, I think, to watch, knowing that it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. And you get to see Jim Carrey before he was really super good at being Jim Carrey. Before he was super rich from being Jim Carrey anyway.
Yeah.
I thought it was a hilarious watch. Great suggestion. Thank you. I loved it.
Carlos?
In that I hated it.
Oh. I just picture our one fan being like surrounded by Once Bitten movie posters and memorabilia.
Oh, I would feel terrible. I thought they were going to like this. I would feel so terrible. But
no.
I feel cool. Like he had to know that this is the reason it was suggested, was like,
yeah,
this movie's bonkers.
Oh,
see,
yeah.
I will say that I think that there is something kind of charming about most of this movie.
Okay.
It's not good. It's not a good movie. But do you remember when we did the Mario Brothers one, I said there are a lot of bad movies that I love.
Sure.
I'll never love this movie, but I can watch it. I could definitely
totally
watch it again.
Watchable. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's totally watchable. And Jim Carrey's charismatic and you know, I'll follow him. It's not a great movie, but I do think that there is a smart version of this, like definitely a smarter version of this movie to be made.
Yeah.
This would be a movie that if they told me they were remaking it.
Yep.
I'd be like, yeah, give it another shot.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Give it another shot. Like the whole movie, I'm just going like, okay, so Jonah Hill would be one of the friends.
This is exactly the sort of thing I was thinking as I was watching it. It was the new version of this movie. It's exactly what I was doing the whole time.
I'm glad that I wasn't alone there because it kind of deserves to be remade because it's got its moments. You know, there are some things that are unforgivable about this movie. And even saying, well, it was the times, like, it wasn't like the 60s. It was the 80s. Like, black people were a thing in the 80s. You know, we weren't like black gay people were not, like a myth in 1985. They existed.
Yeah. I think we feel like now that the 80s was maybe not that long ago, and maybe it doesn't feel like it was all that long ago, but I think in terms of the progress we've made on that front, I do think it would be astonishing to go back and I don't think we were as enlightened yet as we would now like to believe we were back then.
That's totally valid. And that being said, if only for the fact that it doesn't need to be in the movie, that scene is unforgivable.
Yeah.
It's not only gratuitous, but it's mean and hateful as well as being like having nothing to do with the rest of the film or at least not having to had anything to do with the rest of the film.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think the movie like is really watchable. So,
well, to me, the final moment with the Countess aging but not really. Like, she's still kind of okay. That sort of hammers home one of my problems with the film is it feels like it's trying to be edgy in some spots, but it's way too soft in others. And are you guys ready for my Gene Shalit quote? Here it comes. This is a vampire movie without teeth. It has no bite. Like the count. I'm joking, but that's true. The Countess doesn't feel threatening. Neither do her underlings. It doesn't feel like Mark's ever in that much danger. And it feels like this is a movie that wants to be a lot sexier and edgier, but can't really commit to that. And it doesn't really have the courage to do that. And it winds up playing things a little too safe. And I think there's a real missed opportunity here to make some sort of comment on what happens after someone has sex for the first time, how they change, how their friend's attitude towards them changes. And the film's too clumsy with that metaphor, though. I mean, there's no way you can be unaware that most vampire stories are some sort of parable for sexuality. And this could have been a fun twist on that. Like, you know, the film's fun in a train wreck sort of way. Like, it really is. It's an entertaining watch just for the what the fuck factor. But as a story, it doesn't really work for me at all. Like, I'm not all that invested in the main character. There's nothing at stake for him. His girlfriend never leaves him. There's no conflict with his friends or parents. He's just a dude who wants to get laid. And then when he does, or so he thinks, there's really nothing left to him. And to me, like Carlos said, this is a movie that could be remade. Business-wise, it's obvious why they only remake stuff that already worked. But creatively speaking, like, it's totally backwards. Like, this is the sort of stuff that's really ripe for, goddamn, you can't talk about vampire movies without sounding like a total hack. What's at stake? There's no bite. Ripe for a remake. What the fuck, whatever. But to me, the foundation.
Drove me batty.
Yeah. But to me, the foundation of this story is already there, and you don't need to change that much in order to make this function a little bit better. Because I was thinking as I watched this, I would, like, you know, if you look at some of the more modern stuff like This Is the End or Pineapple Express or those types of movies, I can see a version of this that is entirely driven by the characters. Like, you know, a movie that starts with Robin breaking up with Mark because he's not being patient enough with her. And so his friends take him out for a night on the town to try and get him laid, get over Robin. And he goes along begrudgingly. I think that's the key. And then this older woman takes advantage of him. And the next thing you know, he wakes up thinking he's had sex and he feels good. He feels powerful. Like, you know, the initial signs he's showing of being a vampire are almost like superpowers. And he gloats in front of his friends and starts talking down to them because they're still just virgins. And so they start to resent him and they're avoiding him. And Robin finds out what he did, which makes his attempts to win her back almost impossible. And then the less cool aspects of being a vampire start to kick in. The pale skin, the aversion to sunlight, thirst for blood. And as he realizes what's happening to him and he tries to go to his friends for help, they don't want anything to do with him anymore because he's been a cocky jerk. And Robin wants nothing to do with him. And this crazy story of his is sort of the last straw for her because he won't just own up to what he did instead of making excuses for it. And then you have somewhere along the way, everybody figures out that he's telling the truth. Mark winds up at the Countess's mansion, ready to give himself over to her because there's no use like fighting this anymore. And then his friends break in to rescue him and blah, blah, blah. And it's essentially the same story, the same basic order of events, except there's more of a through line and it's more about the relationships and the characters steer the plot rather than just having a series of scenes that don't always add up to much or have anything to do with one another. Long way of saying that for me, the bottom line is this is a poopy poo garbage movie, but I would still recommend watching it just because you will not believe what you're seeing. It's amateurish, it's misguided, and that makes it pretty hilarious. Like, I found it fascinating in the same way as Mario Brothers, sort of. Like, just trying to imagine how something like this wound up on the screen and sort of appreciating the fact that it did. Donna, what time is it?
It's time to play Who Would You Be? And Who Would You F?
Well, I think we should guess for Donna first.
Ooh.
This one's going to be tough, though, because who would you be? I don't know. Okay, so I thought
the answer to both is Sebastian.
Okay. Well, I thought you would F the Rico Suave lost boy who sleeps with the stuffed bunny.
I did like him.
Who you would be, I don't know. That's so, this is not a movie full of characters that it's like.
I really want to be that person.
I wrote down Countess, and now I don't know why, and that doesn't seem cool. I don't know why you would want to be her. I guess, well, maybe the whole, I do know why. Oh, here's why I chose Countess over Robin or Sebastian or any of the other characters. Okay, so if you're the Countess, you've got some great outfits. You're true. Constantly hitting the bar scene and you're pretty hip. You seem mm-hmm. like you know what's mm-hmm. what. And you've got a whole gaggle of cute guys living under your house. And that's like your life is just seducing like young, cute guys. And that's, well, yeah. This sucks, you guys. I don't believe a word I've said tonight. So I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's who I would be. Did you already say who? Oh, yeah, the bunny guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Carlos?
I think you would be the these are going to be total crap answers. You would be the girl who checks them in at the dance.
That's Megan Mullally.
No. Yep.
Oh, really?
Well, you would be Megan Mullally. I actually feel a lot better about that answer now. And you would F. The girlfriend after she stripped during the dance scene. Done.
Okay.
Lock good it answers. Down.
Yeah. That was awesome. You guys are both wrong. So I chose, this is a little bit weird this week, but the answer is that I would be Mark because he goes through the most interesting storyline. I love Jim Carrey, and I love his faces. I like to make faces, too. And also, I would F Mark.
Oh!
And in this version of the story, he stays a virgin. Oh. He was my favorite. Although I do like the Countess, because Lauren Hutton is way cool, and I think she's really pretty.
Also boobs.
Also boobs.
Boots. She has those.
That's the thing. Yeah. Carlos, I have no effing clue who you'd be, but I effing know who you'd F. you'd F Robin. I don't know who would you be? I don't know. I'd Mark, I guess. I don't know.
I said that Carlos would be the friend who
you're already
is a mature
wrong,
person and you're a mature
young Bill Maher.
Young Bill Maher.
I bet Bill Maher, grown Bill Maher, still uses that line.
Look, I'm a Sagittarius. My name is Russ and I'm a Sagittarius. You would be Russ.
Okay. No, I, Chris is right. I'd be Mark and I'd F Robin.
Whoa.
I'd be Mark though. And this is just me because he's so tall.
Oh,
and I'm just not that tall.
Oh, that, yeah, that'd be nice.
You know, that's it. That's really tall. What it came to. Like,
well, hey,
I, something. You know, yeah, I don't know. I can't explain it other than that. He's tall.
CeeLo moment there.
Yeah, I guess. Mm-hmm. I guess.
I wish.
Wish I was a little bit taller.
I had a rabbit in a coffin.
I thought about being Cleavon Little because I always feel like he's trying to kill the Countess. He always just looks like, don't worry, I'll find someone. I'm not really looking, though. So to me, and he was like, don't worry, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And then he does nothing for like four scenes. I was like, oh, he doesn't care at all. He's just saying these things. Let's see. Chris's turn.
Chris, yeah.
Chris, you would be that really horrible puppet bat from the dream.
Oh, my God.
And you would F Mark's mom.
Oh.
Obviously.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I'm sticking with those answers.
Okay. Close.
Chris, I said that you would be the other friend, Jamie. He's a good guy, you know.
Okay.
He has brown hair. And
this is a real testament to how shitty the characters in this movie are.
And that you would F Robin.
Carlos would be Mark because he's tall. I'm Jamie because he has brown hair. This is great work, writer. Okay, so yeah, I didn't really have a good answer who I'd be. So let's just say you're both right. I'll be Jamie and I'll turn into the fake bat. I don't give a fuck. And then I absolutely, absolutely 100% Robin all the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, guys, that's it for us. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. And while you're there, rate and review us on iTunes as well. Like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at next and to share your own memories of these films. Let us know if you have suggestions for other titles we should revisit. And we'll see you next time.